So tonight I am going to talk about arising and passing away, or arising, enduring, and passing away. And this is something that we see at all scales. We see it at the level of the of individual lives, of the lives of species, of planets, of the universe itself. We see it also with regard to the arising and passing away of mental formations, the forms that the mind perceives. And this is what we are practicing with in Zazen. And this is also what becomes the source both of kindness and an ability to weather difficulties, ups and downs, and receive them both with equanimity. This practice of perceiving arising and passing away. I wanted to read to you a little bit from a book called Food for the Heart by a teacher of the 20th century named Ajahn Chah. He, for those of you who are keeping score, he was a master in the Thai forest tradition, a Theravada tradition. But his way of using language and describing meditation sounds exactly like what we practice with in Zen. So Ajahn Chah says, "You should know that which is arising and passing away is only the activity of mind. When something arises, it passes away and is followed by further arising and passing away. In the way of a dharma, we call this arising and passing away birth and death. And this is everything. This is all there is. When suffering has arisen, it passes away. And when it has passed away, suffering arises again." Perhaps you've verified that for yourself. "There's just suffering arising and passing away. When you see this much, you'll be able to know constantly this arising and passing away. And when your knowing is constant, you'll see that this is really all there is. Everything is just birth and death. It's not as if there is anything that carries on. There's just arising and passing away. This kind of seeing will give rise to a tranquil feeling of dispassion toward the world," about which I'll say more soon. "This is when the mind arrives at letting go, letting everything go according to its own nature. Things arise and pass away in our mind, and we know this. When happiness arises, we know it. When dissatisfaction arises, we know it. And this knowing happiness or knowing dissatisfaction means that we don't identify with it as being ours. When we no longer identify with and cling to happiness and suffering, we are simply left with the natural way of things." And then Ajahn Chah gives us a metaphor for all this. So we say that mental activity is like the deadly, poisonous cobra. If we don't interfere with a cobra, it simply goes its own way. Even though it may be extremely poisonous, we are not affected by it. We don't go near it or take hold of it, and it doesn't bite us. The cobra does what is natural for a cobra to do. That's the way it is. If you are clever, you'll leave it be. And so you let be that which is good. You also let be that which is not good. Let it be according to its nature. Let be your liking and your disliking. Treat them the same way as you treat the cobra. Don't interfere. So this is a really great description of the practice of zazen. It's especially the practice of shikantaza, though it's also related to any kind of breath practice we're doing. In one of the other recitations we do, we hear repeatedly that zazen is physical and mental non-interfering. And the beauty of all this is that it isn't dependent on having some special mind state, because special mind states arise and pass away. Feelings of happiness arise and pass away. Feelings of dissatisfaction arise and passes away. And if we try to grab on to just one piece of that and push away the other piece, then we are continually setting ourselves at odds with the way the world and the universe actually is. And we find that we can't hold on, or that our holding on to what we like doesn't actually cause it to stay. And our running away from what we don't like doesn't actually gain us any space from it. And even the ringing of a smartphone arises and passes away. And it's a really great metaphor. And this is what happens to us all the time in zazen. We get caught in a little loop. Our mind does the thing that our mind does, tells us a story, and you know, or gets caught up in grasping or running or planning. And then on its own, in some amount of time, it passes away. So, and when we're able to, when we really firmly and deeply know that truth, that whatever comes, goes, and we're able to let come all that come, let go all that goes, then there is a kind of freedom, a kind of spaciousness, a kind of equanimity that enables us to move more skillfully through our lives. It isn't something that causes us to only experience the good part, or to transform ourselves into somebody who only has blissful thoughts arising. But even amid all of our frustration and anger, we are able to find a freedom that is right there in the middle of it. This is what Ajahn Chah calls a tranquil feeling of dispassion toward the world. And I want to say a little more about that, because this is something that is very, very different than not caring. I want to give a little example from my life. Last week I was going to a faculty party for my wife's job. She's a professor, and we were going to a department party to welcome a bunch of a number of new hires. We were driving to get there, and we were doing it in the middle of rush hour, in the middle of very, very, very slow street through Cambridge, and amid the greatly narrowed, formerly two-way, now basically almost one-way, but not quite, streets that are all over the place in the midst of all of this snow which has arisen. I was driving, and my wife was navigating. This is partly because she's actually a great deal better at knowing where we're supposed to go, and we have discovered much more patiently able to put up with not knowing where we're supposed to go. This was actually a major recognition for us and a source of great marital harmony has arisen from it, because when we did it the other way, then she was telling her, I have to turn left or right, which way should I go? I don't know, I really don't know. I can't tell. The GPS isn't working. I was driving and she was experiencing a great deal of anxiety, and we were not going to be at the party at the time we had hoped to. We left the house forgetting to bring the food or beverage or whatever it was that we were supposed to bring, and it was a big mess. And to make matters worse, one of the faculty who this was the party in honor of is Liz's former postdoc, whom she had great investment in trying to bring about this state of affairs. There we were, unmoving in traffic. And I suggested, well, we could stop at that store over there and maybe pick up something. And that got a really negative response. And I said, well, we could call or text somebody who probably is there and say, that completely can't happen, and the reasons for that, and the things you don't understand, and you're just not taking into consideration. There was a whole lot of stuff arising. Some version of this happened again and again. And I was experiencing, tension and angst and geez, God, I'm on your side. But I was experiencing all of this aversion, and I was experiencing the desire for this car ride to be different than it was, and for these encounters to be different than it was. But I was noticing this, and I was doing my best to be flexible in the situation, and doing what I could do in the midst of that arising, which is to make an offer, to make a suggestion, and then to desist. In response to all of the reactions from her side, I also had my reactions. But I actually, because the traffic was going so slowly, had enough space to see, yeah, okay, and to see, and I had this image of this cobra. It was the cobra of my own aversion, the cobra of my reactivity, the cobra of this arisen anger in my mind, and it was totally there. I wasn't in some bodhisattva space of whatever, right? There was all this anger, and I was able to let it be. I was able to coexist with this cobra, and And here's the thing, and so part of it was for me a kind of, there was also arising for me a kind of sense of helplessness. I just don't know how to fix this situation, and so seeing that also arising, that other kind of cobra. And what was so interesting about this is that later on, after we finally arrived, finally managed to find a place to spot. To park, and then ended up having a perfectly lovely time at the party, and we're not any later than everybody else who was stuck in the one lane of traffic. But later that night, my wife said to me, "Thank you for being so patient and supportive with me as I was kind of freaking out in the car." And And she was really appreciative and experienced that as me being very creating a very holding and kind of non-threatening space for her to have her experience and do the thing that she's doing. And she was aware of kind of a level of reactivity in her too. But the thing is, and so this dispassion isn't not caring. It is actually part of the way we care, which is kind of counterintuitive. And there's a way in which when we're sitting with our own experience, including our own experience of great psychological distress, great physical pain, great confusion or anxiety, or grief for the world, that part of the loving and compassionate way to be with that is to just receive that, to be with what is arisen, to be intimately present to ourselves in that space. And that very thing is also how we can love and care for others and for this great suffering world, to let be our compassionate heart, to let be our broken heart that feels powerless to respond. And to, with a spirit of love, also let other people be with their lives, their experience, their difficulties. And there's a part of this that is profoundly trusting. Trusting ourselves, trusting the universe, trusting another. But none of this means that we're passive, necessarily. But it means that we aren't that we're having the space to choose, that we're not just acting out of conditioned reflexes. So another part that's very interesting here, when we recognize these mental forms as having arisen, forms of happiness, forms of bliss, forms of anger, forms of dissatisfaction, when we recognize them just as themselves, just as something that's arisen, we don't identify it, we don't identify with it as being ours. So this is really important. And there's a way in which it's really important how we use language, even internally, even within, even when we talk to ourselves. So to talk about, so there's a big difference in thinking about my anger, my fear, my want, and to just notice, there's anger here, there's fear here, there's wanting here. Because it actually isn't, and to recognize these things as, in an important way, kind of their own beings. And and when it's not ours, we don't have to defend ourselves from it. And we don't have to pass judgment on ourselves because of it. We don't have to assess ourselves in light of it. It's just something that's there. And in an important way, these arisen formations, even anger, depression, any of that, are exactly like butterflies or flowers or cobras. All just beings, all just doing their own thing. doing what is natural for a cobra to do, and our mind is doing what's natural for a mind to do. Let be your liking and disliking. Another one of our recitations or chants in Zen that we sometimes do has a line that says, the great way is not difficult. It only avoids picking and choosing. It only avoids liking and disliking. But this doesn't mean that that liking and disliking don't arise. It doesn't mean that that is not part of our experience, because that's part of what it means to be a person, to be a human being. And nothing about this path makes you less of a human being, requires you get rid of any of this, of any facet of this human life. So what does it mean then to not pick and choose, to not get caught up in like and dislike? Liking arises and recognizing that, there's a like, there's an affinity, there's a wanting, there's a pull, and recognizing dislike has arisen. We don't have to, and we are enacting this. We are practicing with exactly this stuff in our zazen. Each time, some form of discomfort arises for us, whether it's physical discomfort or the urge to run fleeing into the hall and into the nearest bar. And when these dislikes or these discomforts or whatever it is arises for us, and we, in the middle of our period of zazen, carry on sitting zazen, we are, whether we understand it or not, believe it or not, see it or not, discern it or not, we are letting that cobra be. And we are cultivating this skill to let cobras be. And this, it's, and that is exactly the skill that we can draw upon in the middle of our any difficulty that arises, and also any ease and pleasure that arises too. So it actually is, it isn't the case that that we only practice with hard stuff. And it isn't the case that you only need to let these things be if they're cobras, but if they're, you know, puppies and kitties, you can go get them, you can hold them. because if we're only doing it with one set of things that comes, then anything that comes, we have to make the assessment, so is this something that I should let be, or is this something I can hold on to? And then when we've got something, then you have the fear of losing it. Your puppy is going to run away or grow up into a big mean dog. And the part of the power of this path is its kind of universal applicability, and the fact that you don't actually have to assess what kind of arising is this, what kind of mental form is this. Is this the good one or the not good one? Is this is this? You don't even have to discern: is it mine or is it not mine? You just have to see that it's a thing. And by meeting each of those arisings in the same way, you are kind of freeing yourself up to respond lovingly and compassionately and from a place of wholeness to all of the internal, external, personal, global sufferings that arise in the world. And this place of wholeness is not separate from an experience of brokenheartedness. And in fact, being able to turn towards our brokenheartedness lets us find wholeness there, which is the exact opposite of running towards the places where we think we're going to be more comfortable. So the whole thing in a really important way is just the simple truth of arising and passing away. And just that little thing can be a great light, a great staff to lean on, a great comfort. And of course, when it passes away, as Ajahn Chah reminds us, suffering arises again. And so there is equanimity to be found when you're really open to the reality that, yeah, suffering will be back. It happens to have passed away in this moment, but I'm completely confident it will return. Then it's actually not nearly so distressing when it comes. But this isn't defensive pessimism. Oh, everything's going to be horrible, so I'm just going to brace for the worst. But it's a way of being undisturbed, even by disturbing things, which disturb us. And in the Dharma, this is called life and death. So, thank you, everybody. I want to leave some space for comments or complaints or observations about any of this.
I really liked your story about driving. That's my husband's and my story. When you haven't been told, it's just a bad, but I've gotten to the point where I know that at some point my paycheck's not going to arrive. And it doesn't upset me anymore. I just send an appropriate email to the appropriate people and go on about my business. It's fairly forceful, it's firm, and it's appropriate. I know it's going to happen again. I can guarantee you that next month at least one of my paychecks will not show up.
Right. And so that's a nice illustration that recognizing that, in the words of one great Dharma teacher, shit happens. Recognizing that and being in a way okay with that is not. Doesn't mean you don't do anything. It means you do send the email so that you actually do successfully eventually get paid. So it's taking appropriate action without grabbing onto unnecessary cobras.
in my life, it tends to go more often that I reach right for that cobra and feel the pain of the bite, and then eventually figure out about putting it back down again. So I wonder if you can talk about that aspect.
Yeah, so letting be the cobra of reaching and having reached, and the cobra of pain and letting be. So it isn't the case that there's only one kind of thing. It isn't the case that there's only that there's only one kind of opportunity. And I mean, this is I'm almost tempted to have you respond to the question. This is about doing what you can when you can, and there's.
It's a lovely image, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a great thought to think that we might be that equanimous, whatever the word is, but the reality is often it's not like that. There's often a struggle that goes on, and there's pain that's felt, and
right.
you know, the equanimity is completely, who knows where it is. And so when you're in the midst of that, where is the aid that this is offering?
The word that is often translated as mindfulness in Pali is sati, and another translation of that is remembering. And when you're in it, you're in it, and that's okay. That's not a failure. That's just a arisen circumstance itself. And it doesn't actually matter whether you notice it or don't notice it. And then at some point you remember, oh, this is me in the middle of this. And then when that remembering arises, then there's a choice. Then there's a moment of choicefulness. But when there's not a moment of choicefulness, there's not a moment that you need to choose what to do. There's only just that line. And so letting, and so there's a kind of compassionate holding of ourselves and our foolishness and our inability to do those things when we notice it, you know. So we don't have to then go back and retroactively conclude that we completely failed over there, because it's actually all arising in this moment. And in this moment, we have a choice, and the part of the choice is to embrace and allow that reality of ourselves when we didn't have a choice. And we can only do that now when there's the opportunity and we can remember. So all of us continually get caught up. All of us continually make mistakes. And, you know, one of the founding teacher of Zen, Bodhidharma, he says, fall down 7 times, get up 8. But when you're falling down, the first thing you need to do is actually be down, be there. And it's it's important to not make this into this image into a metric of assessing your own failure at life and your own failure at being able to handle Zen better, at being unable to handle Zen better. Some number of negatives in there. It's gentleness and kindness towards yourself in those moments. And at some point you remember, even if it's only 3 weeks later, the next time you come to Sangha and sit on your cushion, oh, that thing, yeah, I remember. And then at that point, 3 weeks later, that's the moment of being able to enter into this whole reality. But actually you were never out of it, and it's all even the big messes we make, even ourselves as foolish beings, which we never stop being. Although sometimes with time and patience and practice, we start to have more flexibility. But even though we have more flexibility sometimes, even amid that more flexibility, there are times when we don't have any. And that actually, in my experience, doesn't change, doesn't cease to be the case. And even that not ceasing to be the case, that reality of having no options, of having nothing other than a conditioned response, is just something that has arisen. And it arises, and maybe it endures for 3 weeks, and then at some point you sit down on your cushion and you notice, oh, and it has passed away when it's passed away. But you can't acknowledge its arising and make it pass away. You know, you can't receive it in order to push it out. You have to actually let it be. And as you're observing, that letting be is in a certain way too much. It's too much. We don't even have the opportunity to let it be. It's just being. We haven't even shown up to let or not let. And that passes away too.